The 2021 United Nations Climate Change Conference, also known as COP26, is scheduled to conclude tomorrow after 2 weeks of negotiations in Glasgow. In the past 24 hours, a draft agreement from leaders, policymakers, stakeholders, and researchers has been circulated, with provisions addressing climate warming and carbon emissions. The draft also outlines new timeframes for meeting carbon reduction goals, as well as phasing out coal and oil subsidies. Rich Preston has been covering the COP26 conference for the BBC, and he's with me. Rich, how significant is this draft agreement, and what are the most important details?
Well, it's significant that an agreement has been reached. You've got to bear in mind there's nearly 200 countries at this thing, and getting everyone around the table is difficult enough in itself, let alone getting them to, in theory, agree to most of the principal points. So it is worth noting that a draft agreement has been reached. Problem is, the draft agreement, critics say, doesn't really give any concrete points or concrete markers. For example, it talks about the phasing out of coal, but it doesn't give a date. It talks about limiting global warming, but nobody's on track to achieve that. It talks about countries updating their climate plans more frequently. At the moment, they only do it every 5 years, but there's no obligation. The language as well is quite vague. There's lots of phrases like work continues on a number of areas and countries will continue to commit to and we will continue to look at. So there is a bit of hesitation about whether this is firm and bold enough. And you've got to remember, Steve, this is all about reaching that 1.5 target that was set in Paris in 2015, limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial averages. And at the moment, we're just not on course to do that. To meet that target, we would need to cut global emissions by almost half by 2030. So a bit of concern that whilst an agreement has been reached, it's not really very bold in its promises. And, well, the conference ends officially tomorrow.
Are there obvious reasons as to why there is such a level of sort of non-commitment that you alluded to?
Yeah, there's two areas, really, Steve. There's the scale of cuts and there's the money. Now, the scale of cuts is just very simple: how much each country is willing to cut their carbon emissions by. And that means phasing out fossil fuels, phasing out coal. And for countries like India, for example, that's huge. 70% of their economy depends on coal. It's absolutely massive. But also for the developed world as well. You know, Australia is a massive exporter of coal. So to ask or expect countries to suddenly stop doing that is a big, big, big ask on them. And of course, you know, behind the scenes at home, each leader has their domestic audience they've got to play to, which includes lobbyists from trade and industry as well. So there's the scale of cuts that you ask of countries, but there's also money. And this goes back to the difference between the rich world and the developing world. You know, back in 2009 in Copenhagen, an agreement was reached that rich countries would give $100 billion a year to poor countries to help them mitigate against the effects of climate change, rising sea levels, wildfires, things like that, but also to help them stimulate their own economies to move away from fossil fuels, move to renewables. That money was supposed to be in place by 2020. Guess what? It didn't happen. A new goal has been set of 2023, but because promises have been broken in the past, no one's sure it's going to be reached again. So money is a major sticking point. And the fact is that if real progress can't be made on money, then the rest of this stuff almost doesn't matter.
When we think about all sorts of these worldwide agreements in any form and on any topic, it's obviously important to know who's involved, but also who's not involved. So what are some details about that?
Well, the big headlines at the start of the conference were that China and Russia would not be sending their leaders there. Now, they were represented at the summit. They had delegations, but the leaders, Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin, didn't go. And that really set a negative tone for the start of the conference. Xi Jinping, it was thought he was going to record a video message. In the end, he didn't even do that. He submitted a written statement. Now, that's a big deal because China is the world's biggest greenhouse gas emitter. Its emissions are around double the United States. Russia's president did record a video message, but it was very much, you know, this is the West that caused this problem. It's the West's job to fix it. However, a bit of positive news is, of course, that in the last day or so, we've had this joint announcement from the US and China. And it's interesting because despite the concern that China wasn't going to be well enough represented at the start, then we have someone from the Chinese delegate saying, actually, we've been meeting the American officials behind the scenes for the last 10 months or so. So there was a bit of a kind of international sigh of relief when we heard about this joint pledge by China and the US for various reasons, really. One, you know, there's the kind of political tension between China and the US, and this just signifies that actually they're willing to talk. That's a big enough deal in itself. And just having this agreement is important enough. But also because it does re-establish certain protocols and certain things that have been discussed in the past. So, for example, there is a US-China climate working group that was put on ice for a while, but that's going to now restart. And there were agreements in there about phasing out methane, phasing out coal. So as much as it was a bit of a false start for China and a bit of a negative global impression, this joint agreement with the US has kind of improved their standing internationally.
Rich, let me ask another specific question about timelines. You've also mentioned that generally, but let's look specifically at goals for the next few months. And then when could there be a true progress report? Because for many people, the presumption is and the worry is that we're, without being too dramatic, we're running out of time to make the improvements that are needed.
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, Steve, it's not too dramatic at all. You know, the clock is ticking. Now, when countries met in Paris in 2015, every nation came up with its NDCs, its nationally determined contributions, its own climate plan. And the deal was we will review these in 5 years' time. This is the five-year meeting. Now, it was supposed to be last year, but coronavirus put a hold on things. And the kind of expectation is, well, we'll do it in 5 years' time again. But as you say, that's not going to work. That's too slow. So one of the pushes in this draft agreement is that we meet more often. And the push is for every year. But there's also a pressure on local regional blocs to have their own meetings as well. So, for example, the European Union, it has its own goals on renewables and fossil fuels. The Organization of American States, you know, there's pressure on that group to get together as well. So absolutely, the idea of meeting every 5 years is too slow. This draft agreement says potentially meet every year, but that is just a draft agreement.
And that is the BBC's Rich Preston. Rich, a pleasure as always. Thank you.
Good to talk to you, Steve.